time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 683 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's another great crowdfunding doubleheader this week, and it all kicks off with background noise from Love Letters Every Day, then everything wraps up with a fun chat with two of the creators of Cocktails and Curves. Lisa Burdage and John Hazard are partners in love and art. They co-create the popular diary comic, Background Noise, which has almost 25,000 followers on Instagram. They have a Kickstarter underway for their collection of comics called Love Letters Every Day. It's described this way. It's a quirky collection of Background Noise comic affection from our first year of making diary comics. We discuss how this book came to be, who the characters are, and what we can expect from these creators in the months ahead. Then everything wraps up with my engaging interview with creator Stefan Roux and writer Jeremy Staples from Cocktails and Curves, which has just launched on Zoop.gg. Here's the book's description. A delicious fusion of art and mixology, Cocktails and Curves brings together mouth-watering cocktail recipes and captivating pinup illustrations, each inspired by the essence and charm of its drink. Featuring 20 brand new full-color pinups by Stefan, this collection celebrates his remarkable range in pinup artistry. Illustration is paired with a delightful cocktail or mocktail recipe, making this book a true feast for the eyes and the palate. We find out how this already successful book came to be, explore some of the recipes and illustrations, and find out what else these creators will be bringing our way soon. This crowdfunding event will end in early April, but don't wait. Support this great project on Zoop.gg today. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they all have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Background Noise comic began on National Pizza Day, 2018. I noticed it was National Pizza Day, and I came up with an idea to draw a little comic, and I grabbed a Sharpie and a piece of printer paper, and I drew up this comic real quick. That was about something that actually happened with Lisa and myself. And I brought it down to Lisa and showed it to her, and she laughed. And we thought, well, we can post this on Facebook and it'll be funny and all our friends will laugh. But then right away, we kind of both knew that this was it.
Love Letters Every Day is a quirky collection of Background Noise comic affection from their first year of making diary comics. Lisa Burdage and John Hazard are partners in love and art. They co-create a diary comic, Background Noise, which has almost 25,000 followers on Instagram. The comic was nominated for a Ringo Award in 2024, and they have other independent and commercial comics that have been published in several anthologies and magazines. They've taught and guest lectured on comics creation for the Highlights Foundation, PLG Arts Association of Pratt University. I always like to start with ladies first. Let me just read a quick paragraph here. It says, Lisa tells stories for brands and fun. As an award-winning advertising creative director, she's worked on many household products and global brands. As a creative writer, she's had short fiction, poetry, essays, and plays published in magazines and anthologies. She's currently exploring opportunities for her fantasy novel about a vengeful golem fairy and generational trauma with several interested literary agents. Lisa, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
All right, good. Let me get to John. John spent over a decade at Nickelodeon designing games, creating online animation, and creating characters. His on-air credits include the TV movie Shredder Man Rules and as the animation director for a live-action series Romeo. Other original comics include the newspaper strip Schmooze or Lose and Frankenstein Superstar. John has taught at the Kubert School and is scheduled to teach editorial comics at Pratt SCPS. How are you, John?
I'm good.
Good, good. Okay. Let's get this stuff. People get on me because I don't say this soon enough. The love letters every day will only be funded if it reaches this goal by Sunday, March 16th at 3:24 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And the good news is, as we're talking, you have reached your goal. So congratulations are in order.
Thank you. We're very excited.
Now, let's talk about another thing. You got a project we love on Kickstarter, too. So that's a great thing. So congrats on that, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really wanted it, and we got it. So,
yes. All right.
Happy.
That's good. So that now, let's talk a little bit about the – there's a nice little video at the beginning of the Kickstarter, and I might use a little of that to intro this stuff. But do you want to tell people how the love letters actually came to be?
Sure. So, you know, we've been doing a diary comic, a slice of life comic for several years now. And the first year that we published it on social media, we did a comic every single day. And that was a lot of comics. And that was a crazy, frenetic experience. And we learned so much. We built our brand. We learned how to work together. We learned what we could use as fodder for our comics, how far we could push them. We pushed ourselves, and we just really learned so much. And so when we always wanted to start putting books together with the comics. I mean, we have over 1,000 on Instagram right now. We should probably say more than, I don't know how many there are. There's definitely more than 1,000.
More than 1,000. Yeah. I think that's enough.
But, but we always knew we wanted to do a book about that first year because it was such a special experience, both in terms of the comics that we developed and what we learned. And so what we decided to do was to do a book and pick the best of those comics and also write a few very short essays. As you heard earlier, I also write long form. And so I write essays for Medium and for other places as well. And so we wanted to intersperse the comics with some of these essays that talk about some of the things that people ask us often about, you know, about the comic, like, do you have cats? Why don't your characters have mouths? How do you know what to write about? Those kinds of things. So there's some of the essays are about craft, and some of them are about our romantic journey and our relationship. Because, you know, not only did the comics develop, but we also really grew as a couple and learned so much about each other by doing these comics.
Okay. I don't know if there's anything you want to add to that, John.
No, I think she pretty good.
Okay. Okay. So the thing I'm kind of interested in, and if you watch the video, there's a little bit of explanation as to how this got started.
Yes.
So it's a good thing about that. I'm just kind of fascinated. What's the process to making one of your cartoons happen? Does one of you come up with the idea? I think, John, you're the artist of the bunch. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I'm the illustrator.
You're the illustrator, but I'm the writer, but sometimes John writes comics.
Sometimes
also.
I'll write too, but mm-hmm. She's a writer and I'm a drawer.
So how do you do that? I mean, do you talk about the what's going on and then come up with an idea? Or does somebody come up with the idea? How's that process work? Or does it vary from day to day?
It varies. I mean, we often go through our life and something will happen and we'll turn to each other and say, that's comic. And then somebody will take a note and either one
hopefully.
Of us, hopefully, if not, we'll
if kind not, we'll of forget it.
If not, we'll sort of say, didn't we say there was a comic that happened when we went to the grocery store? And the other will be like, I think so, but I don't remember. And
got to write it down.
So that's one way that it happens. Sometimes there's something that one of us is passionate about and we write a comic, and sometimes the other one rejects it. sometimes the other one says, I don't really love it, but you know, if you really want to do it, let's go for it. And sometimes one of us writes it and then the other one edits it. Sometimes one of us draws it and the other one says, redraw it. Mm-hmm. It happens like that too. Yeah.
And then, after we have a script, which we might text a script to each other, but usually we work on it in Google Docs so that we can both work on it, you know, online,
yeah,
back and forth. And, once, the script is together, I copy and paste the script into, the words that will be in the word balloons in Photoshop. That's where I do my word balloons and put together the comic. Not every cartoonist does this, but I prefer to start with my words and sort of plan out my compositions of each panel with the words first so that I know how much room I have to draw. And then I will think about what art I can reuse because it's a diary comic. So, you know, we have sort of these standing sets that we reuse. Sometimes the couch is a big one because that was kind of the genesis of the comic. Lisa and myself working on our laptops, sitting on our couch in front of the TV, like we usually are, and in the evenings. You know, we have like the front stoop and the backyard and the kitchen table. So we have these sets that I'll reuse if we have reusable art. And I'll put what we can reuse in the Photoshop file. And then I'll export that into Procreate. And that's where I do the drawing. And once the drawing is done, I export it back into Photoshop on my laptop, do the balloons, and I have this technical thing that I do, which it's this thing in Photoshop that you do for building websites called slices. My templates are sliced up into panels so that I can just tell it to export the individual panels for Instagram and Webtoons and whatnot. And then we put them online. So.
Okay. It's kind of interesting. Do you have a standard format? Like, is it four panels or three panels? How do you guys put them together? Or does it vary?
It varies.
Yeah. They were originally two panels and, you know, we wanted to tell more and more. So they grew into four panels. Now the standard is six, but we will shrink it or grow it as we want to.
Also, as we started to like experiment with different platforms, like Webtoon, for example, you know, Webtoon is a long scroll. And so mm-hmm. in that case, it's the more panels that you have, the better. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what people's appetites are. Whereas on, you know, Instagram, it's a carousel where you're swiping. And so it's, you know, if we have panels, we have comics that go to 10 panels or even longer, but it's just not right for that audience.
Okay. So it's kind of interesting because I recently got into Webtoons because I'm a Batman guy, and they started doing what they call the Wayne Family Adventures, which I liked, and it has the whole Wayne family, including Alfred, who is no longer in the comics. He's in there, and of course, I'm like, oh boy, Alfred! I'm so happy to see him there. But I've been reading them on a weekly basis. They come, a new one comes out every week, and they're in the middle of a long storyline with the Joker. I mean, it's been going on for weeks and weeks. But anyway, do yours tend to be like one topic at one time, or do you often carry over a subject from week to week?
Mostly our comics are fairly self-contained. They're inspired by newspaper cartoons that you might have comic strips that you might have seen when you were a kid. but there are occasions where we have told longer stories where it'll say continued and we'll go to another, you know, to another episode. But for the most part, there's a through line, which is our life, but it's not like it's not kind of like if you're telling, if like on a webtoons sort of thing, although, you know, I don't know.
Well, because it's about our life, there's themes that recur every now and then. Like there's this thing where Lisa talks to the ghost of her late mother. We went through kind of like a saga of her father when, you know, he was near the end of his life. You know, those things weren't necessarily every week or every day or whatever. But, you know, they now, you know, that we're thinking about books, things like that, or like some of our travels around the world, you know, we might collect into their own individual themed books.
Yeah. And like, as we're developing those books, we are thinking about how to fill in the gaps a little bit, because for example, the story about my father dying, which was, we did quite a lot of comics about it for whatever reason. I was feeling very prolific while that was happening. But we couldn't get out everything that I wrote. And so now we're working on a book that has some of the, sort of some of the connective tissue.
Because there's a cartoon strip called Mutts. And the guy who made it, he did a thing where he had a, one of the dogs that was in the neighborhood was chained to a post.
Mm-hmm.
And all the fans start going, when are you going to set that dog free and stuff? And so he actually collected that whole story into one separate book because so many fans wanted to see that story alone. So it sounds like something you guys are working on. I think it sounds like you're going the right direction with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We, the first time around when in the situation, the political situation that we're in right now, we had a squirrel character that John came up with that he's in the first book and people really liked him. And
some people like it and some people hate it.
And so a lot of people had sort of said that we should make a separate book about that, but we never quite did. It's a can of worms.
Going to spin him off into his own book or something like that?
I don't know. Maybe not now. We'll see.
Okay. Well, I got a couple of questions because there's a video at the beginning that I was talking about. I find it interesting that in that the panel that's on the front, the cat is in color and you all are in black and white. Is there a reason why that is?
What's your answer to that, Lisa?
Well, I mean, I think the answer to that is that in general, the art direction overall for the comic strip is always been kind of working towards black and white with spot color. But how much color actually comes into the comic has been kind of varying a bit depending on the strips. Cause like I said, that first year when we were developing it, you know, we kind of gave ourselves a lot of license to explore, and some strips had much more color than others. As we're going through this book and develop and bringing it to print, we're doing some work on the color. We're evening things out to make it feel more consistent. There wasn't a consistent color palette for, you know, just because John had
a color palette. It was just a weird hang up that I had. I should have picked a color palette and I didn't. And it's something that we fight about. It drives Lisa crazy, but I don't know. It's just a thing. You know, if a person was doing a comic for Marvel or DC or, you know, one of the big
the big imprints, they would probably be doing it the old-fashioned assembly line way, where there's one person penciling and one person inking and one person lettering and doing the balloons and another person coloring. And, you know, with independent comics, of course, that usually is not the way that it's done, although some people, some independent comic people do that, certainly. But, you know, a lot of us, like me, do all of it. And coloring is not one of the things that it's not my favorite thing. It's my least favorite thing by far. You know, I do it, but it's not my greatest talent. And so I get very literal about it. You know, I want an apple to be red and the sky to be blue and whatever. And when we were doing the comics, like Lisa said, day to day, you know, there wasn't as much time either for me to think about it or for Lisa to art direct, because Lisa art directs a lot. And so, like she said, we're going to polish that part of the books. Pick a color palette finally, where we actually hired somebody to help us fix that. But I, you know, it's funny. I don't think we ever had a discussion about that the characters would basically be grayscale and that there would be spots of color. So, you know, it's kind of funny to think about it. Because we never like said, I don't think, that this is the way it's going to be. It just sort of like happened.
It's kind of like, we never said it, but like sometimes when you put color in, I'd tell you to take it out.
You would tell me to take it out, but the characters were grayscale from the beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of think maybe a part of that is the influence of newspaper comics that was, you know, an early influence for me. That was how I first got into comics, is newspaper comics. So maybe, you know, I was kind of channeling that. I think you could see a lot of Charles Schulz's Peanuts in the design of our characters. Mm-hmm. And also, this is going to sound a little weird, but as a mixed race person, I've always sort of like thought about the colors of characters. And, you know, like in The Simpsons, the original concept of The Simpsons was that they're yellow so that there isn't any color. But then, you know, Carl shows up and he's brown. And then it's like, oh, well, why is he brown? And everybody, you know. So, you know, whatever. That kind of worked out weirdly in The Simpsons. I think I kind of wanted something like that, where it was like a less kind of color focused world. I don't know.
Interesting, because, you know, it's funny because I think like the Wizard of Oz movie stuff, when she gets to Oz, everything is color, but before it's black and white. When she gets back from Oz, it's black and white, which is kind of an interesting thing because it's the reverse of what we expect as far as color and stuff goes, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's really weird that you bring that up, because that also is like a big favorite thing of mine, and I never thought about that, but now I'm going to like think about that a lot.
See, that's the interesting thing about comics and storytelling and things like that is sometimes if you sit and look at it for a little while, you might notice a thing or two that you first, when you just ran through it, you might not notice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I always find those kind of things interesting. I love looking at stuff and going back at it and say, wait a minute, did I miss something? Because I think that's great. Now, it's interesting to me, one of the things about doing a strip, I'm always intrigued because there's a certain amount of imagination that gets into it. Now, the two of you are in the strip. Are these characters exact representations of you, or are they kind of, sometimes you guys kind of vary off a little bit into what you might like to see, or some other kind of variation on you guys, or do you really stay close to reality when you do it?
Well, I always joke that my comic self has much more fun than I do. So, and also, you know, we go to cons and we don't cosplay, but in the comic we do all the time. Like in the comic, no matter what we're into, like our characters get to, you know, express them. We are like, we have Spider-Verse characters. We have, lots of Star Trek characters. We have,
other superheroes, or like whatever TV show we might happen to be watching, like Game of Thrones or something. Mm-hmm. It's just so easy to dress us up. And it's sort of like we might wish we could do that in real life, but we don't have the time or energy to do it. But it's like sometimes in the comics, I'll literally like wave my Apple Pencil around like a magic wand and just like change our clothes. Even though the comics are, very much based on our real lives, and, we really don't stray from like things that really happen very much. But it's almost like there's sort of like a layer of imagination over it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We did a comic recently about the cost of eggs. Mm. And the way that we did it was to put us in a post-apocalyptic world where chickens are like the size of, you know, dinosaurs and, you know.
Right. We had to like riot out And you know, like Lisa wrestled the chicken while I was like loading the giant eggs onto a cart, and it was just, which is, you know, fun for me to get to draw, because, you know, I'm really more about like, I never really wanted to draw reality. Back when Lisa and I were, for years we were trying to like find a project that we could work on together. We would sort of make up things, and I would always tell her, you know, my parameters for what I hoped it would be. And I always tell her, I don't want it to take place in modern day Earth. You know, I would like it to be either all alien or futuristic or maybe in the past. But, you know, I don't want to draw like kitchens and cars and things, but somehow that's what we landed on, because, you know, there was just a certain authenticity about, you know, writing about our lives that just works for us, even though, you know, I would rather be drawing Star Trek people or something. So occasionally, you know, I get to sneak that in there.
Oh, cool. I got to ask, when did you guys actually start working on this project? Remember what year that was?
It was 2018.
18. Okay. So you guys have been doing it now almost 10 years.
10 years.
10 years?
Well,
I guess. I don't know.
Seven. You're getting
seven.
Yeah.
You're coming close.
You kind of scared us.
Yeah, don't.
Well, 7 years is still a long time to be working on a project and stuff.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. I think it's 10. We're going to have to like do some evaluating.
Yeah.
Maybe like make love letters every other day at that point or something.
Well, we don't do them every day.
Yeah, we don't do a comic every day. They're longer and more complicated. And actually, the drawing style has actually changed since that first year. So the way the comics look in the book are different than they look on Instagram now. Because when I started drawing the comic, I intentionally drew them rough. I intentionally drew them in Photoshop with the pencil tool, which doesn't have anti-aliasing, meaning it's not smoothed out, it's hard pixels. Hmm. And I did that so that I would force myself to not be precious about my line work, and I would draw faster and rougher, you know, and so to get it out faster. But then we took a trip to, I believe it was our trip to Puerto Rico. We got an iPad, and so that I could draw while we were traveling. And the drawing in Procreate, all the pens They all have anti-aliasing. They're all smooth. They can't draw in that rough, pixely way. And it kind of seduced me back into being very precious about my line art again. The comics take longer now, but they have a bit more of a sophisticated look.
Okay. Well, you know, usually art styles evolve over time, so it's not a surprise.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a question to it. How many pages are in the book?
The book is about 240 pages.
240, okay. Okay, and do you have an idea when that's actually going to become available to people who back the project?
We're hoping it should be out. I mean, we were shooting for April, but I think it might be May at this point.
Okay. Well, a lot of these are product you already have in hand, so you just have to kind of make them fit into a book format, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's so good. It's just finishing up the layout and doing the coloring.
Yeah. There's work to be done. And there are some never before seen comics that are going to be in there.
Right.
Most of the comics are done.
Well, that's good. That's because, you know, a lot of times when people get into Kickstarters, they don't necessarily have as much as they would like done when the Kickstarter is going on. And then there's one guy I knew, I backed this thing, and 3 or 4 years later in the mail came this book I forgot all about. Yeah. And I said, wow, yeah. I got the book.
It's going to be in the world.
Thank goodness we are not in that position. This is our first Kickstarter. We can't say that we have done everything that one should do. It's been a learning process. And it's been pretty great. But thank God that is a mistake that was not available to me to make.
Yeah.
Sam, I'm interested because there are so many people out there who make that mistake. And it's nice to see somebody who has planned ahead some. Now, I'm always interested in how things got to be the way they are. Why is it called Background Noise Comic?
Well, you know, like John said, we have day jobs, we have kids. And at the end of the day, we would end up on the couch with our laptops, trying to get some kind of creative project that really was meaningful to us done. You know, I write fiction. I write other things as well. John would be drawing things that were important to him. And we would be trying hard to do our thing. And then, like, the world would kind of exist in the background. So it's kind of about, that's what the comic is really about. It's all of that kind of background noise that we are trying to kind of keep out of our creative sphere, but just kind of comes in and ended up feeding us.
Okay. Now I'm kind of curious as to what the reaction has been, because you guys are on some levels, you're putting yourselves out there and people can kind of get to know you pretty well based on the strip. What's been the reaction to that? Has it been what you hoped for, or did something surprise you with that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, when we first started doing the comic, we played it pretty safe. It was, you know, two-bit gags. It was, you know, banana peel kind of thing. It was very, very, very safe. And then at some point we started to talk about things that were more personal. And that was very, very scary. And that just blew up. Like, people just were so excited to hear about the real pain, for lack of a better word. So when we have a fight, or when we talk about any of our mental health issues, people really resonate, and they really reach out to us. There was a point where, you know, people would DM us and ask us for advice. I wish you could be our parents. You know, if we would talk, about, you know, John, one of John's kids is gay and, you know, things like that. They just really appreciated the way that we were just open And so it was amazing. And it really gave us encouragement to be vulnerable and allow ourselves to write about things that were scary and we were ashamed of. And
yeah, the more personal things are, the more universal they are. Although Lisa still won't let me draw either of us on a toilet.
Yeah. I don't think that's true.
I proposed comics.
Really?
Where we would tastefully be on the toilet.
I don't remember you
did not care
that.
For the idea. Oh. Well, okay. Then, you know, that's something to look forward to.
Maybe it will.
You know, I have to say, I used to watch the show 24,
yeah.
which was on Fox, and they used to, every hour was supposed to be 60 minutes of real time. But
yeah, right. It was all real time, yeah.
Supposedly. But the thing was that, you know, when they would get on the DVDs and stuff like that, the commercials and stuff weren't on there. So it would, an hour would go in about 40, 42 minutes. And I'd always be like, why can't they fill it up with real time stuff? And one time on the cartoons, they said, do you want to see Jack Bauer on the toilet?
Yeah.
And the main character goes, maybe. So that kind of stuff always reminds me of those things, because it's I like seeing different stuff in different places. You're talking about being vulnerable. There's a vulnerable
place. That's true.
So that's good. So I'm just, does love letters, is that, you said that you may be down to every other day now instead of every day. Is this going to continue, or are you looking at maybe to move on to a different project?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we definitely will probably keep doing Background Noise Comic on some level. We'll probably pull it back a little bit. I mean, we do it like twice or three times a week now, when like that's kind of our goal, so that we have time to work on other projects. I wrote a graphic novel last year that is an imagined autobiography of John and I as if we had met in sixth grade. And that's a project that we're going to want to start working on. Some of the other, there's some of this, we want to put some of the other comics together into books that are, have a little bit stronger narrative arc. This is, you know, this one is really about the strips one after the other. And so we definitely want to focus on making books. So I don't know if it's going to go away. It's just such a part of our life at this point that I don't know if we could give it up 100%, but mm-hmm. we definitely do want to have time to do other things.
Yeah. The autobiography thing, the graphic novel that Lisa wrote, it's still about us, but it's pretend. It's just like a pretend history, but sort of about like real family history, but there's also fantasy elements.
Yeah.
So it's sort of us kind of segueing into more narrative stuff and more fantasy based stuff.
Very cool.
You know, in our separate art, those are kind of like things that we are interested in doing too.
Okay, very cool. Now, I'm just, of course, we want people to buy the book.
Yes.
That's, of course, the main thing about this. But if somebody wants to read the strips that you're doing on a regular basis, where do they go to find that?
Background_noise_comic on Instagram. It's also on Webtoon, although full disclosure, I have kind of fallen off updating on Webtoon. Lisa's really wants me to get back to that, but you know, everything takes time. They're also on medium.com, which is kind of like an online kind of newspaper kind of thing, online blogging, whatever. That also I kind of fell back on, but I've been catching up on Medium. You know, there's some on Facebook, you know, they're in a bunch of different places. We also have a website, Background Noise.
But they're not on the website.
Yeah. Doesn't the website like have a feed for
it,
or
feeds
does it
for
not
Instagram,
work?
But that's all.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Instagram's the best place. That's where most of them are.
And then
so many.
Moving forward, we're gonna start moving them on to Blue Sky.
Yeah, we just started Blue Sky.
We just started Blue Sky, but...
Yeah, because, Meta might not be such a great place to be, so...
Well, I was on Blue Sky before. You had to get an invitation to get on the Blue Sky. And then all of a sudden, one day, I noticed there was like 25 people wanting to follow me on Blue Sky. I was like, what the? Where'd this come from?
Yeah.
And there was this, what I call an exodus from X over to Blue Sky.
Yeah.
And massive quantities of people were going to me. I said, don't they have to get invitations anymore? I guess not.
No,
that went away. I remember when we first started on Blue Sky, you needed an invitation, but I guess I kind of forgot that happened.
Yeah, but Background Noise Comic, like when there was like the big exodus from Twitter, the more recent one, I went on Blue Sky and I like got a very good following right away. But sadly, we did not putting the comic on until after that initial rush. So the comic still got a bit of growing to do on Blue Sky.
Well, that's the thing with social media. It takes time to keep everything going.
Oh, yeah.
For my podcast, I'm only on social media to promote the podcast. So I am, I'm all these things, I'm sending out stuff as far as I can. But I don't get into anything beyond that. I stick with my podcast on those things.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, because sometimes if I wanted to argue with all, I might come up with a new name for me and go and hide out there under a different name. Because I don't want people to yell at me or any of that kind of stuff. I tend to get both sides yelling at me, so it doesn't really help me out that much. So it just depends on what's going on, where I fall. So just depends. So is there any other project that you all are working on that we should be aware of?
No.
I mean, I write fiction, and I have a novel called The Golem's Daughter that's out with some agents right now. I also I co-host a novel writing workshop through the Brooklyn Speculative Fiction Writers. If you have any fiction writers out there, check us out. I think it's fairly free. It's a very small, minimal amount of money to join. It's a pretty active community of speculative fiction writers, science fiction, fantasy, etc.
I might be teaching a class or possibly two this summer for Pratt Continuing Education. You mentioned it. One of them is an editorial cartooning class, and the other one might be just like a general comics making class. I'm still waiting to hear if that's actually going to be on the schedule. But if it is, you don't have to be a Pratt student or even in the United States to do it. It's online and in person. So,
all right. Well, you guys keep busy, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah.
Reality getting in the way of comics sometimes, I'm sure. But good news is you're with Kickstarter and you've already met your goal. So I'm looking forward to more and more from you guys. I think that this is only the beginning for the two of you. And I think that there's going to be all kinds of wonderful stuff that we can look forward to coming from the two of you. So Lisa and John, I wish you much success. And I hope maybe this will even hit the $4,000 mark for Love Letters Every Day.
Oh, yeah.
We hope so.
Yeah.
Keep going, because it looks like it's a lot of fun to read, and people are looking for authenticity, so I think that's great.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you
so much.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. internationally renowned French artist Stéphane Roux from Harley Quinn and Power Girl, as well as Zatanna, has a crowdfunding campaign going on for his book Cocktails and Curves. The campaign has launched on Zoop on Wednesday, March 5, and aside from his comic work, Roux has worked in animation, in the pinup world, and all other mediums that are fit for his unique style of art. This latest project is described as a delicious fusion of art and mixology. Cocktails and Curves brings together mouth-watering cocktail recipes and captivating pinup illustrations, each inspired by the essence and charm of its drink. Featuring 20 brand new full-color pinups by Stéphane, this collection celebrates his remarkable range in pinup artistry. Each stunning illustration is paired with a delightful cocktail or mocktail recipe, making this book a true feast for the eyes and the palate. And it is written by someone else that's here too. Let's start with Stéphane. Why don't you say hello, Stéphane?
Hello, guys.
Okay, that's good.
Hello.
And he's got a writer that's working with him, and that person is Jeremy Staples. How you doing, Jeremy?
I'm good, Wayne. Thanks for having us on.
It's good to have you. I like to get people so they can kind of identify who's saying what at what time.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So
I'm the guy who doesn't sound French.
Me either, I'm afraid. I don't either. But so let's see. Let's start off with this. Where did this book come from? I have to say, this is kind of an unusual mixing, I should say, of pinups and drinking things. And I was telling Jeremy before we started to record, I won't know much about drinking because I am not a drinker. I can't tell a grasshopper from any other drink, because even though it's supposed to be green, that's the only thing I know. But this is going to be quite an education for some of us, because we get to do some stuff. So why this? I've never seen a book that actually mixed this stuff together and did this kind of a thing. Where did the idea for the Cocktails and Curves come from?
The idea started with initially. I had an idea for a cookbook because, you know, I mean, I shouldn't even say the French and the food, because the French and the wine is also something. But initially it was a book about, it was a cookbook that I wanted the dishes to be showcased by pinups. And then we soon enough in the process with Jeremy, we anticipated that that might have been a little bit too much work. and we naturally shifted to cocktails because Jeremy knew of not really a trend, but he had books, cocktail books, that had been done by illustrators, but they were not including the pinup touch to it. It was just illustrations. And one of my field of interest is pinups. And I think in the back of our heads, both our heads, the iconography of classic pinups, of good girl art, has been so entwined for so long with a certain sense of chilling, relaxing, whether it's in a refined environment or at a barbecue or at a party with friends. And it kind of seemed natural that, you know, the two could meet at some point, you know, that there was a crossroads between those two. And we never really talked about it specifically with Jeremy, but I think we're on the same vibe regarding what kind of look and what kind of vibe we wanted to bring to the book. So that came pretty naturally after we asked the cookbook idea, and we decided to go on a cocktail, because cocktails are short recipes, more immediate. And from an image standpoint, it kind of makes sense to have like a beautiful female character holding a drink or sipping on a drink, or, you know, with a classy dress, or, I mean, even bikinis on a beach, you know, it's kind of a cliche of an image, but it kind of makes sense.
I should mention we are recording this a little early in the process. The Zoop.gg actually is not underway as we're recording this, so I'm hoping very soon when this actually hits, boy, things are going to take off and do really well for you guys, because I think this is going to go really well.
Yeah, it goes live tomorrow, March 5th.
Yeah, that's, we're recording this, like I said, early. And the thing I'm kind of curious about is there's several things I've got to. So how did you get the cocktail mixing groups?
I could take this one.
Yeah. That's more your field, Jeremy.
So as in terms of, a lot of people ask what came first, the pinups or the cocktails. And I mean, at the end of the day, this book is really a celebration of Stefan's renowned pinup artistry and the versatility that he brings as a pinup artist. And, you know, when we sat down, the initial idea was, how do you make an art book, but also give it some sort of utility value or practical value? And that's where we said, all right, how about a book that also has recipes in it? And like Steph said, originally we were thinking cookbook, which we will do eventually. But for our first time out, that was a little too ambitious with the time frame that we had. So we started this about a year ago and we narrowed it down. All right, let's do a pinup themed cocktail mixology pinup book. So Steph already had a few cocktails in mind along with their corresponding pinup concepts that he knew we wanted to include in the book. I then put together a list of about 35 additional cocktails categorized by spirit along with some mocktails and said, you know, which of these just based on name are the most inspiring to you? Which do you think, you know, would make a good pinup concept just based on the name? Mm-hmm. So we sat about it for a while. What?
The names, and also a few quick descriptions, because Jeremy is more knowledgeable on the cocktail front than I am. Just like you, Wayne, I'm not much of a drinker. I might have a glass of red wine once in a blue moon.
Okay.
And as far as cocktails go, growing up in the islands in the South Pacific, I could only care about Mai Tais, and that was it. But also because they have a sweet side and I have a sweet tooth, and that's an understatement.
I feel the need to defend myself here. I'm not a big drinker either.
No, but you're knowledgeable. The amount of things you know about the drinks without even having tried all of them, right? Mm-hmm. You admitted yourself there's a bunch of them in the books that you haven't tried yet, but
there's a couple. I've tried most of them at this point because, you know, for science.
You knew about some anecdotes, some backstories. Right. And of course, for the majority, you knew you had to do the research for the fun facts and everything. But I knew I could rely on you for the things that I gladly admitted I didn't know. And then I knew you had my back on some of those things. Mm-hmm. So I felt confident from the beginning working on these. But yeah, there's only a couple that I had recently. Last year, I went to a show in Florida and I discovered a new one that's close enough to the Mai Tai. So of course it got my attention. But aside from that, I can't really say that I know that much. I've learned a lot making the book. And I can't wait to try a couple because they appeal to me in terms of the mixing and stuff. There's a few others that are more like man's drinks that I know I'll stay away from because they might be too strong for me. I don't like when my cocktails taste like medicine.
Okay. I have no idea what you're talking about, but that's okay. What matters is it might be a good place to start. Maybe some people are interested in finding out more about this kind of stuff. And you appeal to two different kinds of let's just say it has appealing on several levels, shall we say. That you've got the images, and then you've also got the drinks to explore into this. So you've got all kinds of – but that leads me to a question, Stefan. The girls, because it's largely women, and they are, and I got a chance to see a couple of the pages. There's the first one I see, of course, is Autumn Sweater, which has a girl wearing a sweater. Mm-hmm. And then you actually, if you go along a little farther in the book, it has the actual mixing page up there.
Mm-hmm. The recipe.
Yeah. Oh, see, I recipe to me means food, and so I struggle saying recipe with drinks, but that's okay. That's what we'll make an exception for this one here and get that done. Now, the question I have is, so like for example, the autumn sweater.
Mm-hmm.
Is the girl in there a creation of your imagination? Is she based on someone you know? Where did the girl come from?
No, actually, it could be very arrogant on my part, but I take pride in not using references and trying to somehow, through the various styles that I'm using, I'm always trying to capture a little hint, extra hint of realism that would make the viewer think, I can't put my finger on it, but it reminds me of a real person. And that's the best compliment I can get when I nail it down. It's not on all pieces because there are some apparently where I'm really like more cartoony and more extreme in the expressions or in the features, like the nose would be too short and too cartoony. The eyes would be too wide and too big. But when I try to bring it closer to a realistic proportions, I take a kind of like a foolish pride into not using references and yet making you think that it could be a real person somehow.
Hmm.
And then the rest, in terms of rendering, lighting and stuff, it's all about very decisive training years that I've had in my early career in animation, working in at Disney Studios when Disney had a studio in France. I was in the background department, so painting, and I was also drawing layouts at some point. And I was surrounded by artists that fed me with so many different influences, either their own, like what they were producing as artists on the side, or the ones that they knew and that they took inspiration from. So those formative years were so, so decisive. And I still use the basic practice to achieve a certain effect. I know that every time I do, I tap into those, that baggage that I have. Any new illustrator that I can see on Instagram, I try to get inspired by it too. But at the end of the day, when you break it down, when you try to get behind the scene and see how he might have been doing it, you realize that the tools might be fancier, might be like up to date, but the combo of managing values and colors and contrast and lighting are pretty much the same. If you've learned from the best, and if you've learned the basics and they're implemented in your process, the rest is just a different tool every time, you know, as technology gets better, or even practical tools like on paper and stuff. They're just tools, you know. It's the baggage. It's how you learned in the beginning that makes the difference.
So the girls are creations in that sense.
Yeah, they're not real. They're not real. There's none of them. Sorry to disappoint you guys, but none of them are friends. Oh, yeah, no, there is actually a couple. There is actually a couple that are inspired by friends, but we did it just more like as a fun thing. And, you know, we knew it was going to make those people happy.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of the pieces are done without reference.
Okay. What about the backgrounds? Are the backgrounds also creations of yours?
Yeah, the backgrounds, I don't use references most of the time. What I would do is I would use most of the pieces were done digitally. There's only a few ones that were drawn on paper and colorized. At any rate, they were colorized digitally. When I do my colors digitally, I tend to my eyes are constantly working as cameras, taking pictures and noticing things like a texture on a concrete platform on a patio, or a wall, building a fungus in Normandy in an old farm. I will pull out my phone, take a picture, and then use that reference. Use it as a texture Sometimes I would blend some of those textures to make something else, something different. Like I would use that wall with fungus on it, and I will use it to make a grassy knoll, or, you know, it depends on what color you use and stuff. But usually it's digital. It's all made from scratch. And it's, again, like in the case of the autumn sweater, for example, it's the lighting that does everything. The lighting that makes you believe that this is a living room and that it's a summer afternoon, late afternoon outside, maybe even fall, and closer to fall, actually. Well, autumn sweater, duh. But it's all about memorizing, capturing the lighting of that moment. And the best tool an artist can use is his visual memory. That's what it is.
That's cool. Now, of course, I'm just kind of curious. Jeremy, did you get any input on this? Did he show you ones and you kind of gave some input or what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we were going through it, so I gave him a list of 35. He had his couple of cocktails. Then we narrowed it down to 25. And then the final 20, the perfect 20 for the book, cocktails and mocktails together. And then, you know, I started doing my research. Each recipe page not only has the recipe for the cocktail, but a description of it, and then either a couple of fun facts or alternative cocktail recipe ideas for that base cocktail. So while I went off and did all that, Steph had the Herculean effort of creating 20 brand new full page pinups. And so he would show each one to me, from the pencils to the inks and as he was coloring, and get my opinion. And you know, I would say, there are a couple, most of them were perfect. A couple of them, I said, well, maybe, you know, try this, or, here's my opinion on this.
There's a couple where you were making suggestions and they were welcome, because it's always good to have an external eye, mm-hmm. like a fresh eye on things. And there's more than a couple of times when Jeremy, I really pay attention to what he has to say, not just for this book, but like for the promotion of the book. Like, you know, when we put out promotion on my Instagram account and stuff, I always run it by him. And then he goes, move this, do this. And I trust his judgment, because he knows me and he knows what I can bring. But sometimes it can be a little too overflowing, because I want to put too much in an image. And he's kind of like, he can operate sometimes as a Jiminy Cricket and say, no.
It's funny you say that, because I'm an editor for an independent comic that my roommate made. And the one thing he always had me do was I would lay out the script. He would write a page. He would give me the page and have me lay it out the way it's supposed to be for the artist to get. And the one time he wanted this page, he said, this is going to be really funny. This is going to be super funny. I got to the end of it. I said, you know what? It's not funny enough. I said, you got to go back and make it funnier. He went back and rewrote parts of it and made it much better, much funnier.
Yeah, yeah. It's the back and forth is always a good thing.
Yeah.
It could get tricky when you get 3, 4, 5 people, because that's the Kirby's Law, as I call it. It's like too many cooks in the kitchen, and then you can't eat the dish. But but when it's like at least 1 or 2 extra, one being a completely outsider, doesn't know anything about art or anything, just talking with their guts, that can be invaluable sometimes too. But Jeremy knows enough of my process, and he knows enough of the pinup culture, the art and the codes of the genre, that we're more often than not, we're on the same page. You know, whatever he suggests or proposed to change, I'm willing to do it, because I know that he's going to back it up with the right point, the right argument. And sometimes he doesn't even have to do it, because I get it. I get where he's going. So,
yeah. See, it's interesting to me too with pinups. Whenever I talk to people who do pinups, they always say that a pinup is sort of like a very brief story. When you look at it, your mind kind of makes a story or fills in some kind of a something happening with it. Is that the way you do it, Stefan?
Well, this is my kind of like, I want to say this is my pinup upbringing, because I got introduced to the whole genre through Frank Frazetta and Dave Stevens around the same time, right?
Wow.
Picking up, you know, books or being offered books. One of them was an art teacher in Tahiti who gave me a Frazetta book. That was like one of my first introduction to the parts where he was drawing retro. He was drawing in the 50s when he was drawing comic books. His girls looked pinup-y, right? I'm not even talking about the barbarian queens and stuff. They're just, you know, the ones that were more like high heels, skirts, and, you know, like a striped top and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then Dave Stevens, right? And then one thing leading to another, it's kind of like you unveil more and more, you discover more and more, you get more and more knowledge. And I ran into Gil Elfgren. And when you look at what Gil Elfgren was painting and all the guys that were doing the calendars in that decade, the 50s, the 40s, the 50s, Varga, mm-hmm. before him, they were telling a story, like a girl trying to pull an arrow from a target, and then it gets caught in her yellow dress or something. The girl being on that old fashioned machine to the one that's supposed to make you not lose weight, but you know, like that thing that's shaking. You know, there's Jeremy. You know which one I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
that pinup with the little dog.
Yeah, it's the famous, like, one of his famous ones.
It tells a story. It's telling a story. It's a snapshot of what's happening when they're not dressed yet, or when they're about to get dressed, or when they're doing activities, or where they're going with their car to a God knows where, and then the car breaks, and you know, it. They are snapshots, and they're taking little, you know, like little instant snapshots. Yeah, of those. So it is deeply connected to the tradition of classic pinups, and that's what I was trying to inject in some of my pinups. And in the future, I'm going to try to do that even more, because everybody loves to, for a split second, get into a story.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like getting a sneak peek at somebody's life. You know, like, hey, what you're doing right now? Oh, okay, let me help you with this.
And that's the trick, isn't it? I mean, especially when you have a single image. Mm-hmm. You have to make a beautiful image, something that's visually appealing. But the real trick is, how do you take it to the next level? How do you suck the viewer in mm-hmm. to that world and what's going on in that world? And
because the nicely drawn curves might do the trick for a while, but then if you tell a story, like for example, for the cocktail The Spy, it's telling a serious story of sort, right? But then you got the Beachcomber, and then the Beachcomber tells a joke. And then if you pay attention to what's in the image closely, you'll notice. Uh-huh. It might even be a little too literal, but mm-hmm. hey.
Well, let me ask a question. Have you guys settled on how many pages are going to be in the book?
Yeah, there's you can go, Steph.
No, go ahead.
So yeah, so there's 20 pinups and 20 corresponding cocktails. And then a couple of end papers and whatnot. So it's about a 48 page book in total. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful 9.5 by 6.5 size. It is soft cover. Cause again, we just kind of wanted to, put all of our efforts into something without having to sacrifice quality. So, we kept the page count down to a reasonable size. Again, you know, the main part of this is the artist had to draw, Steph had to draw 20 all new full color, full mm-hmm. page images, on top of all of his other work. So that takes time. But it's, you know, it's nice to hold in your hand. It's easy to flip through. It's not overwhelming. And again, it's first and foremost, it's a beautiful pinup art book, but then also, you know, a chance to check out and possibly make some really cool and delicious cocktails or mocktails, and just, you know, make your life feel a little more sophisticated for a night.
And you know what? At first, we also wanted to, we didn't want to stray away too far from what people know of my work in terms of format, like the sketchbooks, and making it like a flexible cover, like a soft cover. and 20 cocktails is something that doesn't take too much space, that's mm-hmm. easy to have on a table or on a counter in the kitchen. Eventually, 10 years from now, when we have upgraded with dozens and dozens of other cocktails, we'll have an encyclopedia of cocktails and curves, and that book will be a coffee table book, but you won't be able to open it in your counter, on your counter, when you want to do cocktails to impress your friends. It'll be more to look at the images, maybe.
Okay.
But for now, we wanted to make sure that it could still be a practical book, something that you can actually use. And it can be used, it can be looked at, and it can be a conversation piece.
Now, see, there's one here I got to ask about. The one was basically just a picture of a girl. There's another one they gave me three to look at. And this one here, it's called Rise of the Drunk Dead. She lives to drink. He drinks to live. And, of course, the bad news is the guy looks like it's a skeleton.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the pinup for the Corpse Reviver, which is a little bit more, I don't want to say more of an obscure cocktail. But a very interesting cocktail. That was one.
I don't know. I got feedback from people. They said, did you know there's more than one? There's like one, two, or three Corpse Reviver.
There is. That's one of the funnest facts. There's actually many variations of the Corpse Reviver. Yeah.
So no, that one was fun to do because number one, I'm a huge old horror movie fans. And let me tell you, since I moved to the US, I'm having a ball every Saturday evening when I can watch Svengoolie. Because I'm a fan, and the thing is that playing in that sandbox and making it like a faux movie poster, I even recycled like logos that I do for my presentations on Instagram. Like I do a Warner Brothers inspired logo with my initials SR, and I put it on the top corner of the poster to make it like it was like a genuine movie poster from mm-hmm. one of those old studios. Mm-hmm. I was playing with the codes of the genre and I was having a blast doing that. Like, and finding the catchphrases and, you know, putting over it. There's a layer of a folded paper, like those movie posters when they're folded and delivered to the theaters mm-hmm. so that it can be displayed, you know? So I played with all those, little aspects of it to make it like, something that some people will spot and will notice and go, oh, wait, he put that in. He put that in, you know, a little bit of Easter eggs sometimes.
A little bit of Easter eggs, yeah.
Well, there's one more that I got to see, and it's the drink is called the Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And it's obvious. It's a girl is on like a couch, and there's an unconscious guy at her feet, and she's holding mm-hmm. a drink up. And you can see the Empire State Building in the background. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of cool about that. But there's a story there. How did that get that way?
Well, it's the angle might not be what you expect, but this one was actually based on my best friend who used to be my model back in France. And I picked her for this one because the other ones, I don't know, I didn't feel like it was going to fit. And I know that she likes, like just like Jeremy and myself, she likes anything retro. And that one, I wanted to give it like a 1940s, 1960s vibe. Even in the picking of the colors, the greens and the reds, the fact that in my idea, the floor is linoleum, which was that thing that they were vinyl that they were trying to make fancy back then. Mm-hmm. The choice of the color for the curtain, the design for the couch, everything is a calculated effort to make it look like it belongs to the era. Aside from the fact that I picked my friend to, you know, to draw her and in a, she's got the Sinatra outfit. That's what I call mm-hmm. it. But mm-hmm. yeah, that was mostly the motivation for this one. And then of course a view of Manhattan through the window that kind of like was obvious. We wanted to go fast on putting the the book together because I realized I had so many pieces to create. So I could have been a little bit more subtle on the approach on the Manhattan side of it, but I was thinking the attention is going to be on the girl anyway. And then putting a gun in her hand and the guy on the floor, it's telling a story. We're getting back to that, to telling a story, right? So it harkens back to, you know, the film noirs, the that usually take place in big cities and stuff like that. So that was like the thread that was kind of tying everything together.
Cool. Now I should mention, because we're doing it a little early, I'm not exactly sure what the link is going to be for this one. Usually it's zoop.gg/seasoncat/ in the name of the book, but you've got an ampersand in there. So
it's actually not the name of the book. It's Cocktails Curves, not Cocktails and Curves. It's Cocktails Curves. I typed it twice today. So
the cover I see has an ampersand in there.
It does,
but not on the
URL.
Link.
It's zoop.gg/c/cocktails-curves.
Ah, okay. So So if we want to get there, and you'll probably be able to see some of these illustrations on that page too.
Oh yeah. They sent us a sample, a mock-up of the page that what it looks like. I just checked it a moment ago before we went live, and it looks. You have some of those samples. You'll see them. The ones we're talking about, you'll see them. Yeah.
Which will be great because it really has a really – you're right. Some of it has a little bit more of an animation feel to it, mm-hmm. and other ones have a lot more of a realistic feel to mm-hmm. it.
There's even one that I drew that I was trying to bring towards like those one-shot cartoon drawings that you would find in magazines like Playboy or in other men's magazines mm-hmm. where it has a caption at the bottom. It's usually mm-hmm. a funny, and I draw it in this style too, which was fun for me to do because I love that style, that genre. I can draw a little cartoonier on this one, and also that was not something I anticipated, but it actually saved me some time because it was so easy to put together and fast, so I had more time to spend on others like the Cuba Libre, for example, because the Cuba Libre, I had to look at machine guns and make sure that they were accurate.
Wow.
You know, because there's always the guy that'll come to a show and say, oh, you didn't draw that gun right or that car right.
Yeah.
So I'm always trying to make a point to be as accurate as I can, you know. And also it's fun to do. I mean, getting lost into the details of something manufactured is always fun at some point. There's like a moment, there's always a moment where you're in a zone and you're just having fun with it.
I've got to ask you though, when it comes to like, because some people have trouble drawing machines mm-hmm. because if you do a machine from an angle and it doesn't look right, some people go, that's not right. That doesn't look like it's the right way to do it. Do you talked about not using references, but if you do machines, do you still look at a reference? Okay.
Yeah, for that I use reference because I use reference, but I mean, the game has changed so much in the last few years because I see so many books now published where – and again, nothing wrong with that because it's just another tool. People resort to SketchUp, for example, to bring forth the backbone of a car or a gun, or even like if you're working on Star Wars, you can have the blueprints or the 3D buildup of the Millennium Falcon, mm-hmm. and then you can put it in on any angle you want for your panels, for your layout, and then you trace over digitally or on paper if you print it on paper. But it's saving you time. It's making it more accurate. And you're delivering to the fans what they expect to see. They don't want you to mess up the look or the design of the Millennium Falcon. They want you to draw it like everybody knows it, right? So when I'm drawing a vehicle or a machine, I'm always putting myself in a situation where there's an expert out there. And I don't know if he's going to open the book. I don't know if he's going to even know about the book, hear about the book. But just in case, you know. And I'm learning something in the process anyway, because I'm training my visual memory, and as I'm drawing it, and that's what I keep telling aspiring artists when they come to a show at the table and they ask for advice and stuff. You have to put yourself in the situation where you, when you draw something from reference that is manufactured, a car, a washing machine, a cyclotron, or whatever it is that you find reference for, you have to some extent, you have to understand how it operates more or less. You have to, if you can, you have to retro engineer. You have to break it down and you have to understand why the underbelly of a car should show the axis for the wheels, should show the piping for the exhaust, should show where the tank on an old car, where the tank is, should show the springs for the car to go over bumps and stuff. You have to understand why those things are put in a certain way and why they're here. And you have to the best of your abilities, transfer and transcribe that into something that's immediately recognizable.
Cool. Very cool. Now, again, we're doing this a little early. Do you know when this Zoop.gg project is going to conclude? Is it going to be like a 30-day thing?
Right now, that is the plan.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes that gets extended if for right. some reason you need to add mm-hmm. a couple of days. So it right. may mm-hmm. or may not be about April 4th, but sooner mm-hmm. the better, because the sooner you get on there and you go blow past the amount that they want, the sooner these guys won't sit there going refresh, refresh, refresh.
Well,
refresh.
And mm-hmm. we're doing, there's going to be an early bird special on the book for those that want to sign up early. We've got a couple of cool add-ons as well. I go to a lot of conventions with Steph and help him out. And even then, we still get emails for, hey, you know, I've never gotten to meet you. I always wanted a piece of your art. So for those people who have always wanted a piece of Steph's artwork but have never been able to get to a convention to acquire a piece of original art, we're actually doing 5 original art add-ons.
Cool.
3 are superhero pieces, right, Steph? And then 2 are
the stuff that pieces. I'm known for, you know, stuff that I put a little extra work on because I was doing them at home and not even, it was not something that was commissioned. Right. It was just something I was doing for fun. So I was trying
to. And then I think you offered up 2 commission slots as well.
Yeah, right?
People could get their own commission. So yeah, I would say if you're interested in the book, definitely hop on. And get a copy signed, get a copy with a sketch in it, or if you're quick enough, you can maybe score some really cool original art of Steph's as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Now, do you know what conventions you guys are going to be going to in the next couple months?
Yeah, I'm going mm-hmm. to GalaxyCon in Richmond, in Virginia. Then there's C2E2 in Chicago. There's always Heroes Con in Charlotte, which I wouldn't miss for the world. and there's a few more around coming up. Yeah.
Okay, that leads to
another. There's going to be one in France, but it's going to be in April. It's a trading card show. They're inviting me. I just came back from a show in Greece, in Athens. That was just amazing.
Great.
So
if we want to follow you guys on social media, how do we do that? Jeremy, can we start with you?
I don't have a real big social media presence. My job outside of working with Stefan kind of precludes me from having it. A lot of times you'll see me posting on Steph's Instagram, but really this is all about Stefan.
Okay, Stefan, how about you? Do you know social media that you're on?
Yeah, mostly on Instagram. It's my handle is French Wookie, WOOKIEE.
Sometimes if you've ever met Stefan in person, you'll understand
I'm 6'6" and I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I mean, I'm in right in the demographics that saw the first movie, so of course I'm like, yeah, I fell into the I got the bug.
Okay, well, that's good.
And yeah, so it's French Wookiee. Sometimes people, they know there are Star Wars, but the spelling, they usually forget to put the two E's at the end. And yeah, so that's
right.
Yeah, if you don't, you'll find the avatar soon enough, and you'll know you're there. And then there's my Kara handle, my Blue Sky, which is just Stefan Rue Art. And that's where I post. Whenever I post on Instagram, I post there too. I've started to post. I do a lot of videos, whether they're short, like under a minute and a half, or live videos. And I've decided to extend them more to my Facebook page or to my Facebook account. So they drop every once in a while. They drop on Facebook. So you could probably see them there too. But I think because I connected it to my French Wookiee Instagram account, it shows up as French Wookiee. So basically, this is the one to look for.
And then every other week, every other Thursday.
Yes.
So it's always the first and third Thursday of the month from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Central. Steph and I do a show on Whatnot. And you can find that at, if you search for French Magic Pencil. We do that every other Thursday for 90 minutes. It's a lot of fun. Steph draws different artwork. We talk about pop culture and events and just kind of hang out and chit chat. And, he draws stuff and people throw out suggestions and then we auction it off.
I draw trading cards. I do blind covers.
A lot of times we'll do what we call art karaoke where, I'll just go, I'm kind of the moderator because Steph's busy.
Yeah. You're the MC. Yeah.
Yeah. And people will go, hey, draw this. Or we're like, all right, you know, give Steph a prompt. Tonight's theme is pinups or monsters or anime. And it's a lot of fun. So feel free to check us out there.
Well, it sounds great. And this book looks like it's going to be spectacular to have because it's just gorgeous artwork. Well,
thank you.
So I highly recommend get on to zoop.gg. And according to what it even says here, it's absolutely right what you were saying. zoop.gg/C as in cat/cocktails curves, all one word. And they'll get you to it. And I'm hoping for much success. So we get cocktails curves number 2. Before long, it'll be
nice. Oh, well, in a few years, we're going to extend the recipe list. So there'll be more coming over the years in the future. Because
the plan right now is hopefully we won't be able to get a volume done for 2025.
Oh yeah, this is the one that we're promoting right now, and this is already a lot of work done. The additional pieces will come in like 3 years, 4 years from now. So, yeah, you're going to enjoy that one for a few years for sure.
All right. Very good. Well, much success to you guys and keep doing the wonderful stuff.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
Wayne, thank you for having us. Keep up the great work.
Okay. Thanks.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.